Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. This week, we talk to Maggie Malone and get a little take on what her Rio de Janeiro adventures were like. We have a sit-down with Texas A&M Athletic Director Scott Woodward, and it's game week, so let's get it. Here, running out of that smoke-filled tunnel they have here at the Zone Studios, is the other guy on this podcast doing his thing, Zach Taylor.
Hey, that's what you're supposed to.
I haven't been to a game yet.
I'm adding to the atmosphere.
Oh, okay, you can't sing and run out of the tunnel at the same time.
That is true. Well, maybe
like
you can.
Like a Britney mic or something like that?
Yeah. Like a cordless mic?
Sure.
Something like that. Somebody might have that rigged up. But yeah, they're going to play Kanye, just FYI, letting you know.
I'm so thrilled to see.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I haven't, well,
everybody loves Kanye.
Right. Well, I mean, I have seen the, like, was it the Sam Conn video on Twitter that went, like, double platinum viral? And
well, anything Sam touches turns to gold. So
sure,
that's the big question.
Sure.
And you're going to experience your first sway. I'm excited for you. Just FYI, the press box is going to sway a little bit.
Well, not as bad as the old stadium, right? That's what I heard.
Not as bad, but it's still noticeable.
Okay.
I've noticed it. I purposely made myself sit there, and you know, you can feel it a little bit, but I didn't think the old press box was that bad.
Yeah.
Especially whenever, since it was on the old side. The old people side, the alumni side. Now that the press box is above the student section, it's a little bit different. Well, so we'll see.
Are you going to? Because I know I've heard stories. Are you going to get off the wood in the press box and just, you know, get down off your chair?
If we had wood in the press box, then I would. But from what I understand, is we're not going to have any wood up there this year. We're going to be actually sitting down in actual chairs.
Well, I just heard you stood in your swivel chair because you believed in that tradition so hard, you know, in years past. So I'm just wondering,
Aggie never sits.
Okay,
Aggie never sits.
Because I'm
standing at heart, but I'm actually physically sitting
right
down.
True.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird rule that they're making. They're trying to make the view a little bit better for folks maybe in the back. So getting everybody off the bleachers. But if everybody's on the bleachers,
it's the exact
same thing. You're just moving everybody down a little bit. But apparently the scientists over at Texas A&M have done studies and have determined that it's better if everyone is off the wood. So we'll see.
Tell me, as someone who has not been in the stands at Kyle Field before, is it just the students that stand up on the bleachers? Is like, you know, 80-year-old Grandma Ethel Ag standing on the bleachers as well?
The rule is if you're in the student section, you have to be standing the entire time.
Okay.
Except at points and periods of halftime. I believe that you also have to get up whenever the band's on the field, whether or not people actually do that or not. But while the players are on the field, while play is going on, you have to be standing up. Now, when someone yells off the wood, that's generally because of an injury. So people are standing up on the bleachers. When they say off the wood, everybody gets off the bleacher because apparently that is some sign of respect. I don't really understand that part.
Sure.
That's a little, again, Aggie traditions are always a little strange.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but quite a few of them. So that's always been the rule, but whether or not they can have everybody just stand, because you have not experienced a Kyle Field student section atmosphere until you've been teeter-tottering on these metal bleachers with, no, 100 of your closest friends, and you're going back and forth, and you got people falling down and stuff. It's amazing.
Doing your Simone Biles balance beam routine?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It really helps internal balance.
Good. Well, beyond just the what's going on in the stands, there is a football game to be played on the field. That is Texas A&M versus the ranked number 16 UCLA Bruins. And the first take that I got from yesterday, again, I guess has a little bit less to do with the actual football game, but it's those comments of that quarterback who seems to have a lot of opinions, Josh Rosen over there at UCLA, saying that, you know, once a stadium gets above 50,000, it's just all noise. Yeah, so I'm not going to be affected by Kyle Field because, you know, just noise is noise, and, you know, after you get over 50,000, it's whatever. As someone who's been to these Aggie games and been to other college football games, do you ascribe to that take?
I understand where he's coming from. There are some great stadiums, and there are plenty of large stadiums in the Pac-12. The Rose Bowl itself holds 90,000 plus.
Right, but the highest attendance, he's a sophomore.
Right.
The highest attendance of the Rose Bowl last year was, I believe, around 83,000.
Really?
Yes. Okay. And the highest he played, no, excuse me, the highest was about 80,000 at the Rose Bowl last year. The highest he faced last year was at LA Coliseum, which was, I believe, around 83,000.
Okay. Well, when you look at, I know somebody was talking about Onsen Stadium up in Oregon. They've got 56,000. It's like, oh, well, whenever it's going, you know, it's loud. He's experienced that before. You know, that's 56,000 is not going to make as much noise as 100,000+. I don't care who you are. That's just how it's going to work. But the thing with the noise is it can be a factor if A&M is in it. If A&M is winning or if A&M is close to coming back, it can be a factor. However, if the Aggies are down, like, you know, whenever you look at Texas A&M's largest attendance ever at Kyle Field was against Ole Miss in 2014, and that was a blowout. The Rebels just came in and just took it. So, yeah, it was loud at first, but then things got real quiet. So, like it is at any stadium, if the home fans are in it, yeah, it can make a difference. If they're not, if their team's not in it, therefore the fans aren't in it, then it can be real quiet. So we'll see. Depends on what the score looks like, you know, in the second, third, and fourth quarters come Saturday.
Well, so all the more reason to have you down there with the Britney mic running out of the tunnel, you know, screaming Kanye.
Hey. Hey.
So.
Everybody loves Kanye. Well, not everybody
No, I think.
He's if they bring, this would be awesome. This would be the perfect Kevin Sumlin, Coach Cool swag copter thing. If they brought Kanye in on the swag copter and then dropped a rope down and he descended onto the field and was on the 50-yard line to usher in the team.
Sure, sure.
That and would be the ultimate. Just, if Kevin Sumlin can pull that off, I'll give him major
props. Just drop right down onto Miles Garrett's shoulders.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, like chicken and fight style.
Yeah. Miles runs around with him on his shoulder.
Right, right. Well, so, again, we have a football game to be played. And I think a lot of the talk yesterday at the game week press conference was that of Noel Mazzoni and his former role at UCLA as the offensive coordinator, what he knows of the players, what the players know of him. And it was interesting to hear him actually give a pretty honest answer about how he's modified his system and his coaching style to what UCLA has now so that they, so they don't pick off signals or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so he said there at first some paranoia set in, and you know, coaching paranoia is a real deal thing, but ultimately he said, you know, what's the deal?
We got Photogs coming in.
Photogs. The great Tim Hurst.
Tim's coming in from the Eagle, and he picked the right day. Tim showed up yesterday just because he wanted to hang out with me for a little bit.
Well,
I told him that the podcast was today, and he got all upset.
Well, when you were practicing your Kanye.
Oh, that
so,
is true.
You know, I think that's something that everyone wants to see. But yeah, so Mazzoni and just his takes on what that UCLA team will remember about him or try to pick off or just kind of an interesting dynamic.
We talked about this. Actually, Kevin Sumlin thinks that the advantage lies with UCLA. I'm inclined to agree with him because as we talked about this actually last week, you know, UCLA knows what Noel Mazzoni's about. They've seen him for 4 years. They know what kind of things he likes to implement in his offense, what they can expect. Even though he might have changed the verbiage up a little bit, they've seen it before. Whereas on the other side, A&M doesn't know what UCLA's bringing at the table. Noel Mazzoni might have an idea of what those defensive players look like, and he was asked a little bit about that yesterday. But ultimately, he doesn't know. I mean, that wasn't his forte. He went up against those guys in practice, but that wasn't the entire deal for him. What I do think goes in A&M's advantage a little bit in this is that Noel Mazzoni can tell John Chavis about these guys, especially Josh Rosen, because I think that is huge in order to get into the mind of this quarterback. Again, he's still a young guy, albeit very talented, to get into this guy, to put pressure on him, to rattle him up a little bit. You've got to have a little bit of an in-depth look on him. And Noel Mazzoni, having been there from day one for Josh Rosen, I think that will help A&M and John Chavis on the defensive side.
Sure. And So looking into just what this Noel Mazzoni offense will look like at A&M, I think we've asked just about every kind of offensive position group what it'll look like. You ask the wide receivers, and they say, well, we're going to get past the ball a lot more. This is going to be a wide-open offense. You ask the running backs, and they say, well, it's going to be a power running offense. And then you ask some of the coaches, they say, well, actually, it's a run pass option kind of offense. And I asked Christian Kirk about that, and he said, well, you know, that's only a wrinkle of it because that only picks up 5 to 6 yards. There's other aspects of it. And James White again said they're going to be really run heavy and really establish the run. From what you've talked to people about and just from what you gleaned or even guessed, what is this offense going to look like on Saturday?
When you look at the strengths of A&M, on paper, the running game is what's important to me. And that's really a strength of theirs in that they have a stable of running backs, very capable running backs, and some really talented guys. And when you have an offensive line that you don't know, tell you the truth, it could be a crapshoot as far as what the offensive line for A&M is going to do in pass protection and run protection, all of the above, because there's so many variables that we just don't know. Eric McCoy, a redshirt freshman, going to be playing in his first collegiate game. You've got another freshman in Colton Prater up there at the offensive line. You're moving guys around up front. Jermaine Illuminor is getting moved. He's now at tackle as opposed to guard. So there are a lot of questions going in about this offensive line. I think a strong running game with some very powerful, capable backs will help even that out. While the receivers, you look at the receiving core, there's so many talented guys, and no doubt they're going to get their fair share of plays and passes. But if I'm A&M going into this, I think we've got to utilize this running game, and we've got to be proficient at it.
Before I completely contradict you and own you, who's your feature back?
My feature back? Keith Ford.
Keith Ford, I think so too. I think Kevin Sumlin's just a little bit of a coy. Oh, well, the three guys we have are Travion Williams. Yeah, he's done all this stuff. We have James White, always done all that stuff. And Alan Cannon. Who's that other guy on our team?
I can't remember.
Oh, Keith Ford. It's gonna be Keith Ford. It's a poker face kind of thing. But I think that Saturday, it's going to be the most wide open offense A&M has seen since the Johnny Manziel era. I think they are going to throw the ball deep over the middle, home run shots, especially from the beginning, just to try to establish that aspect of the game. Now, I think it's going to come back to bite them later in the season, but I think for this game, I think that's why they're going to win it, because it's going to be very spread out, very wide open, and it's going to be high scoring.
So how many pass attempts does Trevor Knight have this Saturday?
Oh,
if you're talking about throwing the ball all around, we're going to look like Texas Tech.
Not that much. 12 caliber, but a lot of passes for the SEC.
So you're saying 40 plus passes for Trevor Knight?
Yeah, I would put it in the, I was thinking the 30 to 40 range.
Okay.
And with a decent amount of completions too. I don't think that it's just going to be anything that anybody's going to be expecting. Just spreading it out and getting it downfield. Now, again, we can get this take later in the season for other previews. I think that's going to come back to bite them there, because I don't necessarily think that the rushing offense is going to be as just potent as we think it's going to be. And when defenses lock down that deep pass, it's going to affect the offense. They're going to have to kind of redefine their identity a little bit. But yeah, I think it's gonna be wide open. I think there's gonna be a lot of passing.
I think it's gonna be 20 to 30. I think probably 25 to 28 if we're really cutting it down. I don't think they're gonna be throwing the ball more than 30 times, but it wouldn't be the first time that I'm wrong, and it would probably be the first time that you're right. So there's a first for everything.
It would work out for everyone. So anyway, we will get to some predictions and all of that coming up here later in the show, so you'll get our take. Real quick, key to the game. What's the key for an Aggie win?
Run game. I'm going to say the running game. And, well, all right, I take that back. Can I go back on my choice?
Yeah,
here?
We'll give you a mulligan.
Okay.
You paid for it before the show started.
Mulligan on this, the secondary.
You just took mine because I think the cornerback play is going to be huge. You have two guys who saw playing time last year, weren't starters, weren't in there necessarily maybe on some of the bigger plays, and this is going to be a good passing team. It's going to be the corner. So you say you can take the secondary.
Well, this is how closely things are, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and I mentioned offensive, the run game, but since you're going to go secondary, I'll say the defensive line, because that's going to help.
Is that a double mulligan?
That's two mulligans.
Okay.
If you play golf with me before, you know I take two mulligans at a time. Each hole, two mulligans. I think you look at any part of the defensive side of the game, that's going to be important. Josh Rosen's not going to be able to make a lot of passes, though, if he's flat on his back. And so the secondary won't have to work hard if the defensive line, those defensive ends, Myles Garrett, Deshaun Hall, can get to the quarterback and pressure him. That's going
to
be key.
Which is curious because John Tavis yesterday said the ability to get to the quarterback might lie in the ability of the secondary to stay on their men and have, you know, basically coverage sacks. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. That's pretty much all the time that we have to talk about this because, you know, we've only been talking about it for like 6 months now. But coming up next, the man in charge, Scott Woodward. We sat down with him, me and Robert Sesson sat down with him yesterday, and he had a bringing up of an issue that gets talked about often, and so why not let's talk about it some more. That's next. Back here at the My Aggie Nation podcast, or as I like to say, and we're back at the My Aggie Nation podcast. Robert Cessna and I yesterday had a lovely sit-down talk with the head honcho himself, the boss Ag, if you will, and that is Scott Woodward, the athletic director, and had plenty of really great things to say about what this next athletic season is going to hold. But the thing that stuck out to me the most is, of course, we had to ask that question that everyone asks about this time of year. When will A&M play Texas
again? When they got to do it.
You know, I would love to get the rivalry reignited, but it has to work for both of us, like I said. And they have tricky scheduling with their nine-game schedule in the Big 12, and we have tricky scheduling now with our eight games in the West, as well as a mandate that we play a Power 5 team. And so we have games scheduled out for quite a while now. And we have 8 years' worth of games scheduled. So we're talking, and Mike Perrin's a great guy, and I think the world of him. And hopefully we'll get to some type of agreement. But it is complicated, and it's not easy for both of us.
Well, from the sounds of that, it sounds like this rivalry is going to happen again. Now, it might be in 2034 or something, but it's going to happen again. Is that kind of what you took from that a little bit?
I think everybody believes it's going to happen again. Both sides think it will. But the whole thing is, it's politics at this point. It's hurt feelings. It's people of power that don't want to make one decision or another. I think we've seen how easily it is. You can't go with the whole, well, we've already scheduled this, da-da-da-da thing. Because we've seen all of these teams are able to back out of commitments that they made in their schedule. I mean, A&M was supposed to play Oregon, but at the time, Eric Hyman didn't want them playing six home games and six road games. He wanted the A&M playing seven home games, and so he swapped it around, and now they're playing Clemson. I mean, it's one of those deals that it can happen. It just takes people that want to make it happen, and I think both sides are still really hurt about the divorce. But on the other side, can you think about the amount of money that they would make? I mean, you're talking about a non-conference game that's between two schools, a Big 12 school and an SEC school, that could possibly pull in as many, if not more, viewers than an SEC-SEC game and or a Big 12-Big 12.
And you hit the nail right on the head.
The
right, yeah, that too. Because the NCAA doesn't rule college football. The college football playoff doesn't rule college football. The TV networks rule college football. And when they get that contract that's lucrative enough that says, you know, hey, maybe both of y'all had a team that backed out in this year, we will throw so much money at y'all to get that game, ESPN or Fox, it'll be a bidding war. That's when it'll happen, because it's all about the TV contracts and it's all about the money. And so when that opportunity presents itself, that is when the game will come back.
And again, I see it from the Aggie side, because the whole breakup happened right at the end of my time at A&M. But when you see it from the Aggie side, it says, well, you know, Texas A&M has benefited financially, bar none, greatly by this whole move to the SEC, and a lot more exposure too. I think it happened at the exact right time. They caught lightning in a bottle, so to speak. Not to take too much away from Dave, but they caught lightning in a bottle in Tuscaloosa. So that's what happened when A&M moved to the SEC. they did get out from under that shadow of Texas. And now that that move has been made, as an Aggie, you hear all the time, well, we'd be fine with playing Texas. Bowen Lofton said whenever he was president of Texas A&M that he would play Texas. You know, you've got folks like John Sharp who were talking about that. So whether or not it seems like A&M is the one that wants to play it while Texas doesn't, but at the same time, you never know. And it's also, I think, if they were to play at this point in time, with everything over the past few seasons staying the way it is, if it stays that way for this year, if they played this year, it's much more beneficial to Texas than it is to A&M. Because if Texas loses, everybody says, well, we knew they were going to lose anyways, they're rebuilding. But if they win, then Texas A&M is going to lose all the momentum, what momentum they have left, because they've lost quite a bit. But whatever momentum they have in recruiting over Texas, in plugging in that the SEC is better than the Big 12 against Texas. So that, to me, I think the Aggies have much more to lose should they start playing again. But again, it's a while off, and things in the college football landscape could look completely different this time 3 or 4 years from now.
Just play the game at the end of the season and the coach that wins gets to keep his job?
That would pretty much...
Stakes a little bit higher?
I think that's about how it would go for this year, because you look at Mike Sherman, a lot of people could say he lost his job because he lost to Texas. Even though I don't think that was everything that went into it, but that was definitely big and sure. Might have been the straw that broke the camel's back. So obviously I think the fans want to see it. You know, I've talked about this before. I've got family who are SEC fans. I've got a lot of LSU people in my family somehow. You know, I've got some Bama fans. I've got some Arkansas fans, but I've got much more Texas, especially Texas fans, Baylor fans, TCU fans, Texas Tech fans. And if there's definitely one thing that I miss from the Big 12 is having those regional rivalries where you've got brother against brother, not second cousin who lives in Alabama versus you.
Right.
So that to me means so much more. And if you can at least bring some of that back. And another thing to talk about is they've brought it back in every other sport but football.
Sure.
You look at baseball, you were at that baseball game mm-hmm. this year. I mean, that was one of the coolest experiences and atmospheres I think you'll find.
Softball knocked Texas out of the NCAA tournament.
Softball, you got basketball, played them, could have played them twice, almost played them in the NCAA Sweet 16. Everybody was looking forward to that, or not the Sweet 16, I apologize, but the second round. So it's been brought back in every sport but football, and it's only a matter of time.
Sure. Two things to some of your comments there. First, I think someone commented this week that they would really hope that we would have Dave South on this podcast, and I think that was about the same thing, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I can do a kind of a sort of a Dave.
Right.
Like, especially baseball, like, back, back. He just went big fly!
There, so we have Kanye Dave and rolls. Dave. So really our guest list today includes Maggie Malone. We have Scott Woodward, the AD, via tape. And then we have Kanye and Dave South. So we'll just bill all of those for the podcast.
And some
today.
Of the multiple voices in my head. Yes.
Exactly. Second thing back onto to the subject is we have I went to Big 12 Media Days this year and talked with a bunch of Texas players about, you know, their memories of this rivalry game and if they want to play back. And the overwhelming thought was, yes, they grew up watching this game. You know, a lot of them were from Austin and went to these games, and that, you know, yes, Texas OU is equally as significant to UT fans, but Texas and Texas A&M was a big game, and that they would like to see that come back. And some of the guys, you know, most of the guys that go to these media days are juniors and seniors, and they wouldn't like see it come back. But I asked, did they wish that in their time they could have played one of these games? And all of them overwhelmingly said yes. Yes, because, you know, especially in the time that the kids who are playing, yes, the kids who are playing now didn't play in the games. It's cycled out that far now. But they were right in their sports-watching teenage wheelhouse when these games were huge, when, you know, games were won. The last game was won by a field goal. And so I think that media and entertainment is making a lot of money on reboots and bringing back nostalgia of the childhood. And I think we're at that place maybe now with the Texas and Texas A&M game, that the nostalgia of some of these kids going back to their childhood and watching these games is big, and they want it back.
Well, this November, it'll be 5 years since they last played on the football field. And you mentioned, yeah, it has left a bad taste in Aggie's mouth. And Texas, despite their poor records over the past couple of years, still has those bragging rights, you know, 27-25. I was there. I had my head hang down low as I left the first deck of the student side. But it just makes sense. It makes sense to the fans. It makes sense to the coaches. Apparently, it makes sense to the administration, because you've got guys both over at Texas and at A&M, ADs, presidents, saying they want to play it. So where's the hangup? What's causing this thing to stall? Why can't we just go ahead and get this thing done?
TV contracts. You got to get. You want to make the most money off bringing this back.
What TV network would not want to carry that game?
No, starting the bidding war, having the availability to start the bidding war.
Yeah,
because that's what you want. You want to hold this thing out enough to where it becomes almost pay per view quality, like the hype of UFC fight. Just wait on it until it becomes so big that people are bidding out their pockets to try to have this game on their network.
It's like rolling up that tube of toothpaste. You roll it up from the bottom, and more pressure, and boom! Cap flies off. Just like that. That's exactly how it's going to happen.
Or the Alka-Seltzer in the film canister, middle school project.
Something like that. An explosion, whatever.
In the sky.
Yeah.
We'll have that as the outro to the next segment, if we had the licensing rights, so we won't. But, you know, just imagine it in your head. Anyway, so that's a little Texas A&M rivalry talk, something that I think people from both sides will complain about, but secretly want to know about and want to talk about and want to complain about.
Just play the game. Just play it.
Right. So anyway, up next, we have just probably one of the best guests we ever have ever had on this show. Well, I take that back. We've had two guests now. One of the top two guests we've ever had on the show.
She's better than Colin. You can go ahead and say it. I think he'll admit it too.
Right. So, and that is Maggie Malone, javelin thrower, track extraordinaire, back from Rio, ready to tell us about all the stories that happened down there in Rio de Janeiro. So stick around for that right now.
Welcome back to the Miami Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And joining us in studio is the one, the only, Maggie Malone. Hey, Maggie, how's it going?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good. Well, you recently came off a pretty cool adventure.
I did.
Went to the Olympics.
Yes.
And
pretty cool.
I'm trying to make that sound as casual as possible. So I heard you left town the other day. You went on a little trip.
Yeah, I went to Rio.
Went to Rio de Janeiro, hung out with Ryan Lochte for a little while.
Yeah, so. No, didn't hang out with those guys that night. Definitely avoided that crowd.
So I know competing down there, it might not have ended the way that you wanted to, but what a really cool experience, and something that you can take going forward and hopefully in another Olympics.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was disappointing just not competing to what I had all year, but you know, this is the first time I've ever competed internationally. And then on top of that, just on such a large scale, I've never competed like that in my life. So it was a huge experience for me. And I'm really excited for the next 4 years. I'm really excited for this year. It's a world championship year. So basically, it's like the Olympics, but kind of at a lesser scale. So it'll be good. It'll be good to take this and gets me motivated for the next 4 years.
Sure. So the one question I have about the actual competition, because I think really we're all more interested in just how cool the experience was beyond that. I was watching. There's, of course, no commentators. So we were trying to, you know, just like pretend like we actually knew something about javelin.
Yes.
And the second throw. What happened on the second throw?
So you not only are talking to an Olympian, but probably the first one to ever get a yellow card in the sport of track and field for the United States team. So what happened was that nobody on the track like spoke English except for one person, and he kind of spoke broken English. And so I'm used to a collegiate setup. So what that means is that they bring us all out. They say, here's the order that everybody's going to throw in. And then, you know, they'll do the traditional, like, so-and-so is up, so-and-so on deck, so-and-so on hold. And they keep saying it. Well, I didn't even, like, know that the competition really started, because it just kind of happened. No, there were no words said. Nobody brought us in. Somebody was just on the runway, started throwing. And I was like, okay. So then after my first throw, I knew that some people had already hit the standard and they weren't going to take their second throw. So I went to one of the officials and I asked her, I said, hey, where are we at? Like, where are we on the list? And she pointed to my name and I was like, oh, me, I'm up. And she pointed to my name again and nodded her head. And so I said, oh, so I'm up. I showed her my credential and she nodded her head. And I said, okay. So I went, grabbed my javelin, got on the runway. Mind you, nobody is stopping me. Like, nobody on the field is saying, oh, you know, this isn't so-and-so from Czechoslovakia. You know, she shouldn't be throwing. I mean, so it was really frustrating. So then I threw it, and I went and talked to my coach. And as I'm coming back, the official came over and said, you have a yellow card. And I was like, what? I didn't even know there were yellow cards in track and field. Like, what does that even mean? And so he was like, oh, he's like, you threw out an order, and if that happens again, you're out of here. And I was like, no, like, she told me to throw. And she looked at me and put her hands up and was like, no, I didn't say anything. And I was like, okay, you want to play that game? So, yeah, that's what happened. So then I got a yellow card, and it was very interesting.
So it wasn't that you just slid too hard in behind someone like in soccer or something
No,
okay.
No. It was nothing malicious at all. And so then I just apologized to him, and he was kind of upset with me because I kind of messed up the rest of the order. But, you know, live and learn.
Sure. And having followed your collegiate career and following some collegiate javelin mm-hmm. this year, what were the weather conditions like? It seemed like a lot of the throws were not mm-hmm. maybe where they were for across the board.
Absolutely. So it, you know, Rio was very different. First of all, it's winter down there, and so it was a little chilly. And it rained a few days. Like, I don't know if you watched the discus at all, but like, so Shelby Vaughn, my teammate, she competed in basically pouring rain. Like, it was downpouring. And then, so we had some of that, and then it was just chillier. During the days, it was sunny and hot, but at night it kind of got, I mean, it was fine. Like, and honestly, like, I liked the weather. I just underperformed. And I think a lot of it was, one, the season had been so long. Two, I'm in a huge, you know, arena with all these external factors. And three, this is a brand new experience and, nothing that I was ever used to. And so, I'm disappointed with it, but at the same time, like, there was nothing that I'm like, this is what happened.
Sure.
Because it was a bunch of stuff.
I'm just glad she's not blaming us for coming on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
Like, well, you know, everything was fine until I came on here, and then y'all really screwed me up.
Yeah.
And Travis, I don't know what your next question was going to be. Mine was, though, other than competing,
yes.
What was the coolest experience that you had down there?
Oh, gosh. I got to be on the Today Show, which was really fun. So I got to meet Matt Lauer and Bob Costas and Hoda, and just be on the beach and talk to all of them, which is awesome. And, you know, made me think, I was like, oh, maybe I want to go into TV someday. I don't know. So it was really neat. And it was right on the beach. It was beautiful. The weather was so great. And then obviously just like talking to all these amazing athletes that, you know, I talked to Ashton Eaton a few times, and just, you know, he's, for anybody out there, Ashton Eaton is, you know, the best, you know, representative of track and field in the United States. Like, he is just a genuine person. And so it was just good to hear his stories too. And then I got to meet the gymnast, the final five. And so that was really cool. And I, you know, watching them on TV, they look a little bit taller than what they are. But when I actually met them, I'm like, holy crap, like, you literally come to my hip. So that was really neat, too.
That's awesome. Yeah. What I know you were talking about some other sports that you were going to check out. And
yes.
If you followed your Snapchat, I know mm-hmm. you got to see, what was some of the coolest fan experiences that you got?
Oh, well, I was really frustrated because I was going to do, well, there are two downers. One, I had tickets to the soccer final, and that didn't actually go the way it was supposed to go. And then two, I had tickets to the basketball final, and planning on going to that. But then the timing of the basketball final and closing ceremonies was so close. They were like, there's no way that you can get there and then be able to come back and participate in closing. And I was like, well, the reason I stayed was for closing. So I'm going to do it different next time. But then obviously watching Michael Phelps's last race, that was amazing. And then just hearing what he had to say afterwards, and just being a part of Team USA, like, you really don't understand, like, how, you know, tight Team USA got that, like, until you're a part of it, and that we do all root for each other and that we support each other. And, you know, talking to each other in the elevators or at the village dining hall. I mean, just all that, just being a part of all of that.
Sure. And so the other thing that caught my eye in following, you know, Snap Adventures and whatnot, tell me about these houses, especially that Nike house, because I know me and some other Colin Deaver, who's a TV person around here, we're talking about that. Like, I want free Nike stuff.
Yes,
tell me about this.
Okay, so whenever you go to big meets or big events, there are houses, and basically they showcase all of their new stuff, and it's a place for athletes to come and hang out, get some free stuff, eat, just relax. Basically, it's also to gain sponsorships. So in Rio, first of all, there are country houses. So, like, there was a USA house, there was a Jamaica house, there's a Holland house, and like Matthew McConaughey went to the USA house one day, and so did what's that girl? Oh gosh, Effie Trinket off of the Hunger Games. You know who I'm talking about?
Elizabeth Banks.
She was there. Yes. I was like, God, what's her name? So it's people that just come around and they can hang out, eat, drink, whatever, have a good time. And so Omega House, so watches were there. Lululemon had a house. Beats had a house that gave out free Beats. What were the other ones? So Adidas.
They have a whole house, though, that is just packed full of this stuff?
Yes. It's like they and it's not like a house. They call them houses. But so like Nike, because they are the leading, you know, sponsor for track and field and any other sporting event, really, they had a whole golf course. And they rented out or bought whatever. I don't know what they did. And created, you know, brought in these, what did they say? These domes from, like, South Africa, they said. And they just put all of their different shoes, different shirts that they're going to have. And then, so being a Nike-sponsored athlete, I got to go. And then, one, I got to customize a T-shirt, some shoes, sunglasses. And then they also give you just like a bag of stuff and with your sizes. And then I went back a second time because I wanted to go golf. And I got my dad a bunch of golf stuff, like shoes and polos and all that kind of stuff. So, and then they had food out there, sushi, and just, it was awesome. And, you know, it's there for the athletes. So, I mean, if you want to like do it right, then you see Nike.
Sure, sure. So you talked about all this swag that you're going to be getting on down there. What? Fill us in some more on the swag, just beyond the Nike house swag. What all did you come back with? Was it like, did you have to check two extra bags?
Yes, I had five bags coming back. And basically just Ralph Lauren stuff, again, the Nike stuff. I bought a lot of gifts for people, which was super expensive. But I just thought, you know what, they've been a part of my journey, so I wanted to give something back to them too. So T-shirts, cups, pins, all that kind of stuff, which I don't know if you know, like, about the pins. Have you ever, like,
what? Saw it on TV a little bit.
Yeah, so each country gets their own pin, and so at the so we get a lanyard with credentials on it, so we have to walk around the village always with our credentials, and it basically just says who you are, what country you're from, so you're allowed access. And so each country gets a pin, and then you trade with other countries, and you put your pins on your lanyard then, and then just, like, see how many pins that you can get from other countries. So it's really cool. You're able to, like, talk to people then, and, it's just really neat to be a part of that, too.
Was there one athlete? I mean, you spend a lot of time with these folks, both United States and from other countries. Was there somebody who just really got under your skin? I want to know
got
the dirty.
Under my skin?
Yeah, you just don't seem like somebody that would get, you know, real upset about anything. But was there one athlete you're like, I can't stand them? Were they Russian? Because that makes sense.
I'm trying to think. Were they Russian? Yeah, I didn't see many Russians. Nobody really got under my skin. I kind of kept, you know, back a little bit and tried to learn from all of them because I'm so new. I had great roommates. So they put six of us in a room.
Wow.
I had five, though, because I had an Olympic champion from the last year. So I had Brittany Reese, who is an Olympic champion long jumper, like two-time. I had Kendall Williams, who's from Georgia and won the heptathlon, and not at trials, but she like in at nationals. And then her teammate, Couture Orji, who got fourth place by 3 centimeters in the triple jump. And then my like roommate was Amber Campbell, and she's this was her third Olympics in the hammer. So I had really experienced people also. But yeah, nobody really got under my skin. Actually, okay.
Okay.
If I do want to put one. So the first day that I get there, I did get to meet the final five or whatever, and I'm like walking out, and not to, you know, I'm sure she was just having a really rough day, or was hungry or tired, but I said, oh, Simone, like, can I get a picture? And she was like, well, I'm kind of busy right now. And so then she kind of walked off, but they were all, so then Gabby Douglas and Allie Raisman were like, oh, like, we'll take a picture. Like, it's fine. Super nice people. And so they kept walking, and I, halfway through us walking, realized that we're going to the same place, which was to eat dinner at the village, like, cafeteria. So it's not like she was in any really big hurry. So then I had to awkwardly follow behind them. And just kind of watch them, like, keep my distance a little bit, I guess. So I guess that was my only one that I had. But I'm sure she was fine.
Yeah, didn't know if you were a stalker.
Stalking her. I was, like, getting ready to beat her up or something.
Well, as you talked about, they're snack size, so you probably could
take care
of her.
Yeah. I'm sure she was just having a rough day.
Sure. So, finally, you said the closing ceremonies was a big deal, and I watched it. It did look like a giant party.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Oh, it was so fun. It was very different. So I got to be a part of the London 2012 closing ceremonies, but as a spectator. So I got to go with my aunt and uncle just to watch. And it was very different. So London, you know, and I actually probably enjoyed London just a little bit more, mainly because it was English. But also they did it more of a concert. So they had, like Spice Girls performed, a bunch of like English bands, One Direction, who I'm in love with. So, you know, those guys. And then it was really fun. But Rio's was more like culture based. And so they had like cultural dance, and they had their president speak for a long time. And then they had these like dancing vegetable looking things, which was, I didn't understand what they were going for, but it was cool. And it poured rain on us. I don't know if you could see that, but it was freezing and it was pouring rain. But, you know, everybody just embraced it, and it's really fun to be there. I actually snuck on to the floor area. So, like, where they were performing, I was, like, maybe 2 inches from them, because I just kind of, like, I'm going to make my way to the floor, see if I can get some better pictures. And they let me, so.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was really great.
That's awesome. So, since we're having to wrap this up a little bit, what's next? What's next for Maggie Malone? Because I know everyone can see, well, of course, it's the next Olympics. That's 4 years away.
Yeah, it's 4 years away. Obviously, like, that's my four-year goal. I want to go to Tokyo 2020. And ultimate goal, like, I'm going to get a medal. And now that I have this experience behind me, like, that's going to be my focus for the next 4 years, is to get a medal and to figure out what I need to do to get there. But this year, it's a World Champs year, and so that's also in London. Hopefully, I'll make the USA team and qualify for London and go there, compete. Next year's an off year, and then the next year's, again, a World Championship year for track and field. I'll be busy for the next 4 years. I'm still in school for this year, and then planning on getting my master's here, helping coach at Texas A&M right now. So I really have a good life. I really have something good going for me. I'll just participate in some meets and hopefully just get a little bit better each and every year. I've only done this for 3 years, so I got a long ways to go. But yeah, hopefully I can compete for the next 2 Olympics or 3.
Well, Maggie, thanks so much for coming back. Thanks so much for, you know, letting us have someone that we kind of like knew to follow at the Olympics. That would made it all the more special. And we'll have to keep in touch, and especially when this Miyagi Nation podcast is going on 4 years from now.
Yes, definitely.
You will be back in the studio.
Yes, retweet.
For the Miyagi Nation podcast. Good. So thank you so much, Maggie.
Thank you, guys. I had a blast.
All right, coming up next, well, that's the end of the show, but we have some picks. We have some college football picks to send you out on, so we'll have those next.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Wrapping it up with some pick'ems. It's pick'em week. We can do that since college football is technically it kicked off last week, but this week it's kicking off. And we got Maggie with us. She is our guest picker, our guest expert picker for today, I guess you could
say. I am an expert.
She's going to be way better than we are.
All right. Yes, well, I'm an expert. Guest pickers and ladies go first. So, Maggie, we were talking about, we gave you five games. Of course, the Aggies and UCLA, which we'll have to see what you pick on that. We don't know. Georgia, North Carolina.
Yes.
USC and Alabama, which should be a really good one. Ole Miss and Florida State, which I think is going to be a real great one.
I do,
too. And we've got a rando in there. We've got SMU and North Texas. At least we're keeping it within Texas.
Polyester Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. So, that being said,
my picks.
Who have you got picked out of those?
So, number one, A&M. Got to go with my Aggies. I am an Aggie. I believe in my Aggies. They're going to kick some butt. Number two, Georgia, because, you know, I'm going to go with the SEC on this. Three, Bama. Never root against Nick Saban. That's my rule. And four, I think FSU's going to win because they got that new quarterback with the French name. What's it? It's like
Francois,
yeah. And apparently he's supposed to be pretty dang good. So, and then my last one, I'm going to go with North Texas.
Ooh.
Yes, because you know what? SMU, I feel like they've never really come back after they got that death penalty. So, you know, I'm just going to go with North Texas.
Ooh, hot sports take there. Okay, yes. Well, I'm going to go down the line here. Of course, we're going to go A&M. Again, wide open offense. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia versus UNC. Give me the Bulldogs in that one. I'll take the Bulldogs. Yeah. USC, Alabama. Yeah, it's going to be Bama. I mean, they're going to probably be in the national championship this
year. It's Nick Saban.
Yeah. So we're going to go Bama. Ole Miss, FSU, give me Florida State.
Yep.
Now, Maggie, you know, knowing more about their quarterback than probably I did at the moment. So I'm impressed with that. And then Polyester Bowl version, you know, was this 2016? 2K16. Give me those Mustangs. High on the Hilltop and
yeah.
Big D. Chad Morse's crew is going to take that one.
All right, so I actually have some differences between you guys, believe it or not. So we've got some diversity here,
right.
So that's good. I got the Aggs beating UCLA.
Yes.
Me being myself an Aggie, I just can't bring myself. I'm one of those guys, I can be a realist, okay? I can be an Aggie, but still be a realist. But I think A&M does have a pretty good shot, especially at home. Georgia, North Carolina, I got the Tar Heels.
Really?
And College Station
Why?
Native Larry Fedora. Getting it done.
All right.
You know, I think Georgia's going to be good under Kirby Smart, but it's going to take them a little while. And I don't think they have quarterback troubles, you know, when you're talking about where the heck they're going to be. You know, North Carolina came close to winning the ACC last year. And we all remember the Russell Athletic Bowl that they got beat in. But that being said, I think they're still going to be a pretty formidable opponent this year. So I got UNC with the upset. And they're at home, by the way. USC, Alabama, you got to go Bama, mainly because I'm afraid Nick Saban will haunt me in my dreams if I don't. But other than, you know, I think USC is going to be okay, but I think they're overranked, so we'll see. Ole Miss, Florida State, I got the Rebels.
Do you really?
Because, all right, look, Chad Kelly, I think arguably is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the nation this year. They had a lot of turnover on defense. But offensively, I think the running Rebels are going to be pretty good, and I think they're going to edge Florida State.
Where's that game at?
I think that's a neutral site, is it not?
Yeah, it's in Orlando.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a neutral site, which I guess Orlando is pretty much a home,
I was
home
say,
game
that's
for Florida
not that
State.
Neutral.
But I have no doubt Ole Miss fans will show up. And SMU, I got to go with you. Chad Morris, the Aggie, again, another Aggie. But I think Chad Morris, SMU, is going to be much better this year. I think they saw improvements last year. So playing UNT, who has not been relevant ever. So
they're going to be relevant this year, I'm telling you.
Okay, she's got the mean green.
This is the Morris Bowl. You got Chad Morris versus former Alabama quarterback and Allen High School quarterback, Alec Morris.
Oh.
Now the quarterback of UNT. So, interesting little wrinkle in that one. Well, Maggie, again, thanks for being here. We'll be back next week breaking down that really intense game that we're going to have here in A&M, A&M versus Prairie View A&M, and breaking that down very, very carefully. Also want to throw a shout out to my buddy Andrew Sullivan for help letting us use some of his great music for the in-between segments and at the end of the show here. If you haven't listened to any of his music, go to Spotify, look up Andrew Sullivan, or go to andrewsullivanmusic.com. Great guy, great music, check it out. Well, For Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown, and this is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have the seams. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me.